You know how popular Scandinavian crime fiction is, right? But that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's also Scandinavian food, furniture, clothing, vodka, all these Nordic things we just can't get enough of. But do you know Scandinavian jazz? This is a track off the new CD from Norwegian pianist Tord Gustafsson. He's one of the most admired Scandinavian jazz artists performing today. And this is the German-Afghan singer Semin Tander performing on the new album. It's Norwegian hymns and the poems of the Sufi mystic Rumi. Steve Paulson is a huge fan of Tord Gustafsson, and he thought this album sounds a little different.
This interaction with Semin Tander, the vocalist who's featured on the new album, is in a way a new step for me, but also very much connected to that history of mine. And the repertoire that we do, the Norwegian hymns, they are my standards, so to speak, as a jazz musician. They are the tunes that I grew up with, the tunes that I played in church and sung in choirs growing up.
Although we don't usually think of church hymns and jazz as going together, but in your music they do.
Yeah, for me they really do. And of course in America you have the whole history of so many jazz musicians being brought up in church and gospel music and spirituals being a part of the roots of American jazz. Also here it's, what should I say, a slightly different temperament to it, but still... Yeah, the hymns to me are, the melodies are so strong and the lyrics really speak to me, although sometimes they speak words that I have to struggle with or radically change or reinterpret, but still they speak.
Now, this album, What Was Said, is not only evoking Norwegian hymns, you're also drawing lyrics from the poems of the 13th century Sufi poet Rumi.
Yeah.
How does he figure into this?
Well, to me, the core messages of this album is that I don't see the separation between liberal Christianity and Sufi spirituality as a fundamental one. We come from different traditions, but we can really meet, and we can go so much further than just have respect and dialogue. We can meditate together, and we can really learn from each other. And when the idea for this album was conceived in me, I was at the same time reading a lot of Sufi poetry, working with Hafez and Rumi and others, and feeling a strong urge to revisit the hymns of my childhood, both the musical and the spiritual roots there. When we search for the essence, when we strip it down to what feels essential and true to us today in these hymns, what we're left with in many cases could just as much be a Sufi poem or be something that a Sufi mystic would gladly enter into together with us. And the messages of the Rumi poems and the messages of these hymns to me are then really intimate conversation, not just respectful dialogue.
Would you call this devotional music?
Yeah, because that's how it feels to me. But at the same time, that's a dangerous label because it's connected to subcultures and kinds of music that separates listeners into believers and non-believers, like Christian devotional music. I have a strong tradition with that myself, but I have an equally strong struggle with it and an equally strong necessity to really distance myself from the kind of Christianity that says, here's the truth, the others are wrong, and we need to convert you.
So you grew up in a Lutheran church. Are you still a practicing Lutheran?
Yeah, a liberal one, for sure. So I go to communion, but I also meditate and also have huge inspirations then from both Sufi Islam and from other traditions also.
Well, all of your music, really, I mean, that I've heard, I mean, going back years, has a very meditative quality. There's a spareness in your music. I mean, sort of the opposite of busy. And somehow you have a way of bringing silence in. Is that something you sort of think about consciously? I mean, how silence is part of your jazz?
Well, I try to approach what feels essential. I try not to play what's not needed. I try to really listen for what feels needed instead of playing a lot of notes before even feeling them. From this search for the essential and this search for where is it that we're saying something that feels unique, that feels authentic. And very early on, when recording the first trio album back in 2002, it happened often that I had this feeling that the intensity grew when we played less. Me and Jarle Vespestad and Harald Johnson, the bass player back then, this almost physical / spiritual feeling of intensity and meaningfulness of the music growing by playing less. And that has stayed with us ever since.
As you've been describing this, it almost sounds like prayer. I mean, I don't know if you sort of see a direct analogy between what you do in music, I mean, in your jazz, and the act of prayer.
Yeah, for me, there's a strong connection. And again, that's a very meaningful analogy to me. It's basically, to a large extent, the same kind of being in the world, the same kind of presence in my mind and my body. The parallels between prayer or meditation and making music are really strong.
This is so fascinating. I mean, I can hear that when I listen to your music, and I'm wondering what it feels like to you while you play. I mean, I'm sure it's not always the case, but at times, is this a sacred experience to you to play music?
Yeah, I would actually say that it's always a sacred experience, but a sacred experience that also embraces life and the physicalities of the instrument and the room and the body playing with all its messiness and all its challenges. Also, you have to be so intimately in this urge for gratification, for the music to speak to you, for the music to basically feel intimately good. But you also have to allow for all the disappointment that can be there, all the frustrations that can come from not being able to fulfill these needs or desires. For instance, a acoustics not being optimal, noises in the audience, all these things. You cannot let stuff like that throw you off.
Well, I have to ask you about an essay that you wrote a few years back, which outlined some of these ideas that you've just been describing, what you've called the dialectical eroticism of improvisation. And it's worth pointing out, you have a degree in psychology. I mean, you sort of have this scholarly hat where you bring some of these ideas into the world of actually playing music. But, I mean, you make a connection between jazz improvisation and sex.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Do you want to elaborate?
It's not only me who have been doing that over the years. The whole notion of groove is about being inside a rhythm, building up well-being, building up tension for release. It's about bringing yourself there with all your desires and your needs to be held, your needs to bring something in actively into the world and at the same time be received and held. To me, there are huge parallels between the challenges, the paradoxical challenges of fields like this in improvisation and in relationship, in intimate life.
So when you are improvising at your best, when you are really in the groove, how does it feel? I mean, and what are you thinking?
It feels like there is no separation between the here and now and eternity, that there is no separation between elegance and rawness, that there is no separation between myself and the instrument. And still, I can analyze it, I can be aware of all the elements. I can be quite analytical, actually, but analysis is taken up a level into intuition and into flow.
Now, when music critics describe your music, they typically place it within the tradition of Scandinavian jazz, which is usually described as a music of quiet intensity. Some of the things that we've already been talking about, spareness with a lot of space between the notes. Do you think of yourself as playing within that tradition of Scandinavian jazz?
Yeah, there's definitely some truth to that, although for me, being from Scandinavia, I tend to notice more the difference between the different projects originating here, the different players here, than I notice the similarities. Because my inspirations are, sure, they are the lullabies and the melancholy nature of some of the folk music from Norway, and they are also the blues, they are also Caribbean music, impressionist composers, Ravel, Debussy, Bach, of course, plus the whole history of American jazz. So it's a matter of making sense of that multipolar universe of inspirations.
Well, it raises an interesting question about whether jazz is predominantly an African-American form of music, just as many of us might consider Western classical music to be, you know, a European kind of music.
Yeah, that's a big question and an interesting one. And I can really agree that jazz is American music, but then I'm not really playing it. I'm playing then a kind of lyrical chamber music with improvisation in it, partly inspired by jazz. But I think there are good reasons to argue both sides of this, one being jazz is American music, the other being jazz is globalized music that sounds different in different territories. And yeah, it's not like we're going to resolve that debate here and now.
Norwegian jazz pianist Tord Gustafsson, his new album is called What Was Said. and he's about to launch an American tour later this month. Steve Paulson talked with him.